This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This show is brought to you by Pfizer Malaysia, bringing science-based solutions to healthcare.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. In collaboration with Pfizer Malaysia, we are discussing pneumonia vaccinations and we will also be touching on pneumococcal vaccinations. Although vaccines have been credited with greatly reducing the rates of dangerous diseases, childhood vaccination in particular has been controversial in recent years. How do we resolve these concerns we have with vaccines? Well, in conjunction with World Pneumonia Day on November 12th, we discuss pneumococcal diseases and the importance of immunizing your child against them. In the studio with me, Dr. Yong Junina Fadzil, who's a consultant pediatrician and a pediatric. Are you a pediatric cardiologist as well? Yes, both. And she will be joined by Dr. Zulkifli Ismail. He's running late, but we're going to start with Dr. Yong Junina anyway. So, Dr. Yong, let's start with the basics. What is vaccination? What is it made of, and how does it really work?
Vaccinations in general is the act of actually giving something to an individual in order to stimulate the body to produce antibodies. And in turn, these antibodies will protect the individual against infection.
Okay. And what do we refer to when we say immunization? What does that really mean?
When you are immunizing someone, it means you are trying to produce immunity. You're trying to get the person to be immune or to be protected against a particular infection. So immunity can be acquired or natural immunity. So we can give active or passive immunity, and we can actually give the vaccine to a patient or person so that he can become immune against the disease.
And you strongly feel that we still need this in this day and age, this whole idea of immunization?
Yes, even more so, in fact, given that the world population has increased into the billions. I can't remember how many.
Seven billion and still counting. Okay. That was like, I think, 2 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's more development and there's more overcrowding. So there's certainly, and then as we progress, we discover more bacteria, more infections, and therefore the need to protect these children and individuals against even more diseases than before.
Okay. And do you, in terms of immunization protection, we always talk about the individual versus the society. And immunization is a very community-based thing. I mean, I think the other day we spoke about antibiotic resistance, and the doctor who came on said that antibiotics is a very societal drug, you know. Immunization also affects the community. Would you like to elaborate?
Well, immunization is both a personal form of protection as well as society. When you vaccinate enough people, this group of people form a herd of vaccinated individuals, and they in turn confer what is termed as herd immunity, because when disease can't enter a particular community, then those who have not received the vaccine for whatever reason will indirectly be protected against the disease as well. For example, whooping cough. If all of the children in a particular play school is vaccinated, and in a particular family is vaccinated, then a newborn baby who is too young to receive the vaccine will indirectly be protected as well, because those who come into contact with the baby will not be carrying the virus. The same thing with rubella. I think most of us are familiar with rubella and congenital rubella syndrome. If the mother is vaccinated and the mother has antibodies, then the baby will be protected in the womb. But if the mother does not have the antibodies for whatever reason and comes into contact with a child or an adult who has active rubella, there is a possibility that that fetus in the womb may be born blind, deaf, mentally retarded, and with heart problem, because the infection has managed to reach the child. Mm-hmm. But if everyone had received the vaccine, then the possibility of a child getting the disease and coming into contact with this mother will be minimal, and that fetus in the womb will thus be protected.
There is this argument that we are over-immunizing, and we have a clip from Donald Trump, and this is what he has to say.
Autism has become an epidemic. I am totally in favor of vaccines, but I want smaller doses over a longer period of time. But you take this little beautiful baby and you pump, I mean, it looks just like it's meant for a horse, not for a child. 2 years old, 2.5 years old, a child, a beautiful child, went to have the vaccine and came back, and a week later got a tremendous fever, got very, very sick, now is autistic.
Is that substantiated at all?
Mr. Trump has a flair for the dramatics, doesn't he?
Carry on, you were saying your thoughts on what he just said.
No, for one thing, it has been ascertained that vaccines do not cause autism.
Yes.
Secondly, we do not pump a syringe full enough for a horse into a child. It's 0.5 ml only.
Okay.
And even if we were to give combination vaccine, the volume does not exceed 0.5 ml. So I think his statement is quite baseless, actually.
Okay, all right then. So there you go. And we're joined by Dr. Zulkifli Ismail, consultant pediatrician, pediatric cardiologist as well, Dr. Zul.
Yeah, both of you.
Welcome to the show. We were just discussing what Donald Trump had to say about vaccines and, you know, a lot of emotion in his statement, but baseless. I mean, for such prominent people to make statements like that, Dr. Yong, I mean, doesn't it upset you? I mean, you're here trying to save lives and believe in what you're actually doing. But, you know, then you have these people coming and making sweeping statements, which influential people. I mean, how do you feel about that?
It's highly irresponsible of him. Firstly, he's not a medical practitioner. Secondly, he does get a lot of airtime. He is a public figure, and there will be people who will listen and quote him and maybe even believe him.
Yep.
But I suppose, you know, it is up to us as individuals to read up further and to actually find out whether or not such statements are true or false.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Zul, your thoughts on people who go around advocating the anti-immunization groups. What are your thoughts on them, and not just them, but the whole idea and consequences to society, actually?
Yeah, well, you're referring to Donald Trump's thing. Yeah, well, it's frightening. I mean, it's already frightening looking at the way they handle the their suggestions to handle the Middle East crisis. If you look at and this is, I don't know whether people actually take that seriously, but as Dr. Yong was saying, it's actually important that you make statements that are based on facts. And we are actually concerned about the anti-vaccine lobbies because basically what we've done over the past few decades in reducing vaccine-preventable diseases is now overturned just because of the social media and a lot of buzz going around talking about the dangers of vaccination. So we're concerned. The uptake is decreasing. We're getting outbreaks, you know. So, and I think parents need to know that.
Several reports show that the refusal or hesitancy to accept childhood vaccination occurs among the more educated parents. I call them the Wakefield generation. And so why the more educated parents? Are they the ones who are, you know, reading more and more? You know, why do you think that's happening?
If you key in immunization or vaccination on the internet, you find the first 10 or 20 websites are actually anti-vaccine websites, and you will see from the content that they've written, but the titles will something that sounds very very authoritative, but when you read the content, you know that something is not right. But people who don't have the kind of knowledge and the kind of background that maybe medical personnel or people who are more knowledgeable will tend to believe what they read.
What are some of the common claims which people seem to buy into, Dr. Yong?
Okay, one of the things that people cite for not wanting to give vaccines is that vaccines contain mercury. That is not true today. All single-dose vaccines do not contain mercury. Secondly, they say that vaccines contain cells of aborted fetuses. Vaccines today are produced in the labs. Thirdly, they say that it is better for a child to get the infection themselves, because if you were to feed them the infection, then they become weaker. They should learn to fight. Well, there's some truth in that, but if you allow a child to fight an infection, there is a possibility the child might not recover. Are we then going to say survival of the fittest? Do we not want our children to grow up into adulthood? Do we not protect them when they want to cross the road? Do we not wear seat belts when we drive our cars and place them in car seats? Oh no, they don't always do that. Do we not want to keep our children safe? And this is one way of actually training. It's just like giving mock exams before the real exam. You see, you give them small doses so that the body can build a resistance, so that should they have the misfortune of being challenged by a particular infection, if they already have had previous exposure in minute doses through vaccines, they are thus well protected and they will not succumb to that infection.
Dr. Zoll, Donald Trump also spoke about giving too many vaccines simultaneously to children. Will the child system be overwhelmed by this?
No, actually the child system, the immune system is capable of actually taking up a lot more than what we're giving in the vaccines. And, you know, if we give a total of, say, 12 antigens at the moment, there's no issue with the immune system. And the cells will replenish itself anyway. So there's no danger. I just want to, you know, I just came across this article that we actually published, republished in our newsletter. It's about a CDC report that actually looked at side effects.
Center for Disease Control.
Yeah.
Okay.
Side effects of immunization. And I think that the report here was reported in 2015, right, in October, and it said that only 33 people out of 25 million who have been immunized actually had allergic reactions to vaccines, and none of those had severe anaphylactic reactions. So, you know, if parents are afraid of side effects, or I think you're familiar with that Wakefield thing, but other side effects, then I think they shouldn't have that fear at all, because these studies have already been done.
Pneumonia amongst children, is that prevalent, Dr. Yong?
Yes, it's a fairly common disease. In most cases, it is community acquired, and if treated early, and in an otherwise well child, these children recover with adequate treatment.
And the most common sort of pneumonia is amongst children is pneumococcal, am I correct?
Yes, pneumococcal is one of the organisms that cause pneumonia. If you look at bacterial pneumonias, yes, pneumococcal is the most common organism. And we can actually prevent it with the vaccine. We can treat it, but then a lot of the serotypes of pneumococcus now is resistant to the antibiotics that we give. So we have to step up to higher antibiotics and more toxic antibiotics. So it's actually better to give the two, three, or four doses of vaccines in the early part of the child's life and prevent pneumonia from happening in the beginning.
But what are the chances of a child developing pneumonia? Or pneumococcal, the bacterial strain that causes pneumonia.
The chance of a child developing pneumonia from any cause is what's the figure like? It's a random figure, but it's fairly common. It's the commonest respiratory infection in the whole world.
And amongst children?
Amongst children and among adults, okay. Especially the older age group. You have to remember that the pneumococcal vaccine actually can be given to adults as well. Mm-hmm. And it's actually recommended for those above 65. So, and pneumonia is fairly common. Most of it is caused by viruses, right? We have to put it into perspective here.
Yes.
Most of it is due to viruses, but there is this percentage that's caused by pneumonia, by pneumococcus, that actually can kill the child. I mean, we have, between the two of us, must have seen at least 10 cases of pneumococcal pneumonia. And out of that, one or two would have passed through our fingers and died. So we don't want to see that happening among the patients, whichever child.
We're discussing pneumonia vaccinations and pneumococcal in particular. We will come back and find out a little bit more about the Streptococcus bacteria, which causes pneumococcal, coming up next. And one of the other questions I also have is, the Malaysian vaccination schedule does not include pneumococcal vaccines as part of the National Immunization Program. Why is that? We'll come back and find out. This program is brought to you by Pfizer Malaysia. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment brought to you by Pfizer Malaysia. We're discussing pneumonia vaccines. Dr. Zulkifli Ismail and Dr. Yong Junina Fadzil, both consultant pediatricians and pediatric cardiologists, here to explain or help us understand pneumococcal vaccinations, actually. As we mentioned earlier, it is this whole idea of a pneumococcal vaccine is not not included in the National Immunization Program. That's right. We know why, Dr. Yong?
It's primarily cost. The pneumococcal vaccine is expensive, and when we met the Minister of Health, we were told that the cost of administering the pneumococcal vaccine alone exceeds the national budget for all the other vaccines in childhood put together.
Okay. And, you know, a typical excuse for skipping a pneumonia vaccine would be cost, as you said.
Yes.
So what are the consequences of that, though, for those who decide that they do want a vaccine versus those who don't? You know, what sort of consequence will that have amongst children as a whole?
Children who are not vaccinated are at increased risk of contracting the disease, pneumococcal disease. The vaccine can be rather costly, yes, especially if you give it under the age of 6 months and you need a total of 4 doses. You are looking at a cost of a little over 1,000 ringgit in total. However, the 4th dose is given after the child's first birthday, so there is a lapse. Now, if this child were to get pneumonia or to get pneumococcal infection, and the child were to go to a private hospital for treatment, she may have to stay in hospital for a week or more. And that cost, without the complications, without ICU care and other intervention, is going to be even a lot more than the cost of the vaccine. And that's only financial cost. If the child were to develop complications and go into ICU, the parents would not be able to go to work. If the parents have to take a prolonged leave of absence, they may lose their jobs. At the same time, there is anxiety whether or not their child is going to pull through. Mm-hmm. And that emotional cost cannot be quantified. If the child were to pull through, the next question is, will there be any residual effect from that infection? Is the child going to be brain damaged? Are the lungs damaged? Is the child going to be back to normal? Again, that cannot be quantified. I believe that a stitch in time saves nine. Mm-hmm. If we prevent the infection, at least we give the child a good chance of growing up healthy and protected. Previously, parents will say that I'm staying at home or I have a maid at home. My child will not come into contact with other children. Therefore, my child's risk is minimal. Today, the scenario has changed. Maids are no longer commonplace. Most children are sent to daycare, babysitters, nurseries and kindergartens from a much younger age, putting them at greater risk of getting infections.
So pneumococcal is the only sort of pneumonia that has a vaccine amongst pneumonia infections as a whole?
Yes.
Pneumococcal is the only one. And 6 months is the age that you recommend?
You can start from 6 weeks.
Okay. And is there any relationship between age and pneumonia?
You and Dr. Zul to answer.
Okay, Dr. Zul.
He's being quiet.
Yeah, the most children who are less than five, actually less than two, have a higher chance of getting pneumonia. And the chance actually decreases with age. The other disease that's actually preventable is Haemophilus influenzae type B, which causes pneumonia as well. And you know the story that Dr. Yong was saying about the cost, comparing cost. You know, I had actually one patient, this is a real life patient, who actually came and I explained about the vaccine, and then they came back later and they didn't want to take the pneumococcal vaccine. They went off to get vaccines from other places and came back at the age of 8 months. And this child had been coughing for about a month, he had fever for about a week. And she was so ill, so I had to admit her into ICU. She had a pneumonia with fluid in the chest, in the left side. So we actually had to tap it, took out about 250 mL of fluid, and then treated her with antibiotics for 2 weeks. The total cost of that stay with ICU was about 18,000 ringgit. So, you know, I didn't know whether I had told the mother or not about this vaccine. So I asked her, do you remember that I mentioned about a vaccine to you? yeah, that pneumococcal one. She said that. So I said, okay, yeah. But we decided when we left your clinic, we didn't want to do it. So, you know, the cost of about 1,000 plus that Dr. Yong said for four doses compared to 18,000 ringgit for the stay, not to mention the rest of it, which is, you know, the fear of the doctor, the fear of the hospital, the subsequent psychological effects and so on.
You also mentioned that the older population can actually get vaccinated for pneumococcal. What about those in middle age? Would you bother vaccinating?
Well, now the vaccine is actually available. The pneumococcal vaccine can be used from 6 weeks until the elderly. Until okay, you know, 65. So, yeah, so you can give across the board. It is not just confined to children under 5 and then the adult population, those over 65. You can give it even to yourself, Italy.
So if a child is sick, gets the pneumococcal vaccine at 6 weeks and then the last dose just after 1 year of age, is that sufficient to carry through for the rest of the child's life?
At the moment, there's no data to say that there's the how long the protection is. So at the moment, we just leave it at four doses first, starting from age less than 6 months. And then the other recommendation is for those above 65 to protect them. There's a certain amount of what's called a herd effect or herd immunity where you get where you give vaccination to the children, and then the infection gets so much less that the adults don't get it.
You know, based on that parent just now who decided after leaving your office not to get the child immunized, are there differences in way parents view each type of vaccination? And also sometimes we use the National Immunization Program as a benchmark. If government doesn't think that this is absolutely pressing, then there's probably a chance that my child doesn't really need that. Is that how parents view it?
Yes, that's exactly how they feel. Because the concept or this thinking that the government knows best is still amongst a lot of us. And so if they think that the government doesn't think that this is necessary, it's probably not good for my child, which is not quite right. Because there are additional vaccines like this, like the pneumococcal vaccine, like rotavirus vaccine, like all the other vaccines that are available, which actually the child needs, but it's just not in the National Immunization Program or NIP because of cost constraints.
That's why we'd rather not call them optional vaccines, but vaccines that are not in the NIP.
Okay, all right then. And common queries or concerns amongst parents, what would they be?
One of them would be exactly as what you said. If it's so important, why is it not given free in the health clinics? Mm-hmm. Secondly, will be the cost. Third will be, isn't it too much for my child to be taking so many vaccines in one go? Somebody read about Donald Trump. So it is our duties as doctors to actually allay their fears. What I do is, you don't want to give it in one shot because you're taking the... In terms of cost, you find that cost is expensive. They can take the NIP vaccines at the health clinic. They save quite a fair amount there. And then they come to the private clinic just for the pneumococcal vaccine. And we can give that. If the child doesn't go to daycare, they can take it at 4 months when there's no other vaccination. Otherwise, they take it at 6 weeks before the start of the other vaccines, the triple antigen. And then we can plan it such that the child does not receive too many vaccines. Most of the time, parents are more traumatized than the child because the child will just cry for a while.
Yeah.
But it's the parents who have to nurse the child
of
in the
course.
Evening.
Okay? Yeah.
But I think we have to maintain an open channel of communication, a two-way communication between the health professionals and the parents. Only then can we help to allay their fears and to actually minimize the risk of them reading the wrong things and getting the wrong information from the wrong people.
Do we know much about the Streptococcus bacteria, Dr. Zul, in relation to pneumococcal disease?
I think we know enough about how it's transmitted. We know that there are at least 90 serotypes, and we know the common serotypes that cause serious disease. I think there's enough information out there to actually tell us that these serotypes that are in the vaccine is enough to protect against the ones that cause the serious disease. It won't protect against the ones that are causing insignificant diseases, but the ones that are serious, like pneumonia, meningitis, and
septicemia,
it should take care of it.
And signs and symptoms that your child could possibly be having pneumonia?
the classic signs and symptoms of pneumonia will be fever. Usually the fever is high grade. Cough and rapid breathing. The child is breathing faster than usual. The child is coughing. And with that comes the poor appetite, the lethargy, the inactivity. If you take the child to a doctor, when the doctor examines your child, then there will be signs within the lung. When the doctor listens with a stethoscope, she will hear sounds that will suggest that the child has crepitations and therefore has pneumonia. The child may have a solid lung as well, or may have fluid in the lung.
How does pneumonia affect the body?
Pneumonia is essentially an infection of the lung. And once it's entered the lung, it can enter through your nose and mouth as you swallow it. Mm-hmm. But from there, it can actually travel to the rest of your body through the bloodstream because the lung is well covered with blood, with capillaries. So this bacteria can enter the bloodstream. It can go on to affect other systems. You can have kidney failure, renal failure. You can have septicemia, infection of the blood. And once it's in the blood, it can go up to the brain and it can cause meningitis. And if the lungs are badly affected, then it cannot do its job anymore. It cannot accommodate the transfer of oxygen and carbon dioxide, and the child goes into respiratory failure. Mm-hmm. And eventually the child tires out as well, and the child can't breathe on his own. And then the child will need life support and medication.
Sounds very much like tuberculosis, actually.
Tuberculosis can cause pneumonia too. It's just one of the organisms that causes pneumonia.
All right. And how do you treat pneumonia, Dr. Zhou?
Well, you treat them with antibiotics. Basically, it's antibiotics to kill the bacteria. And then we give them oxygen supportive therapy. And if they need ventilation, we ventilate them. The child, I explained to you, I mentioned earlier, actually needed did not need to have to be ventilated, but it was enough for us to actually detect the fluid and take out the fluid from the lungs. That made her breathe better. Mm-hmm. Then we just have to finish it off with giving the antibiotics and wipe out the bacteria. You see, you must realize that once the child has had this infection, we don't know how much of damage the lungs have gone through. And it's like, there's a spectrum. You may have a mild infection without anything, and then the child recovers, and that's no problem. Then there's a severe infection like this one, and we don't know how much is actually damaged and how long the child will be normal like that until the lungs actually start giving problems in old age.
So you wouldn't know the long-term implications at that stage.
That's right. Okay. So we need to follow up that child.
Who? And now with global multi-drug-resistant bacteria, is that going to affect the efficacy of a vaccine like this?
With multi-drug resistance, it's even worse because it won't affect the efficacy, but it will. It should actually make people more aware of the vaccine and actually come for the vaccine because you want to prevent it. Because with multi-drug resistant bacteria, the antibiotics will be less effective in killing the bacteria.
Okay, it'll be harder to treat,
of course. But does that mean that the bacteria itself would have mutated, and that affects, or the vaccines need to keep up with this mutated bacteria? Just going back a little.
Yes. The bacteria may have undergone certain changes in order to make itself resistant against a certain antibiotic or many antibiotics. But because we're taking a part of the capsule, chances are the vaccine will still be effective in protecting the child against the infection. But now the vaccine's role has been stepped up because it is now imperative that the child not get the infection, because by the time we get the right antibiotics, it may be too late for the child. So it is imperative that we not allow the child to get infection.
So how effective is the vaccination?
If you look at the United States, where there is monitoring and how much of the disease, it has caused a drop of 94% over 5 years of invasive pneumococcal disease with the introduction of pneumococcal vaccine in the NIP, or the National Immunization Program.
In America.
So you've got to have this core number of about 92% of the 80 to 92% of the population that's vaccinated, and then you get this effect of reduction of invasive pneumococcal disease by that number.
At the same time, there was also a drop in the people who were not vaccinated by about 60% of the older people who were not given the vaccine. But invasive pneumococcal disease among them also dropped. So there's that. That is that herd effect.
Immunity.
Yeah, herd immunity that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, for those of us who then say, oh, you know, let them get vaccinated so that we get covered by the herd immunity. I mean, what's your message to them, Dr.
That's
Yong?
Not very nice, is it? You're relying on other people.
It's like, don't let your neighbour pay for your security kind of a thing. You know, it's the same problem we have in neighbourhoods.
Yes, exactly. You see, we've got to play our bit too, because yes, while it's well and fine that other people are getting vaccinated and we're going along for the ride, but don't forget that there might be pockets of people who are not vaccinated, and if our child is one such person and he or she were to travel to an area where the disease is endemic and the people there are not vaccinated, then he or she will be at risk of getting the disease.
Okay, hence the need to
herd immunity is a, by the way, if everyone is responsible and conscientious and takes the vaccine, everyone benefits. But if everyone is hoping that the other person will do it, then it's like that poem about somebody, nobody, and
exactly,
and everybody doesn't know who it is.
But a large, I mean, as you said, 92% have to be vaccinated. You know, a huge number have to be vaccinated for herd immunity to actually come into play. Our Health Director General, Datuk Noor Hisham Abdullah, said the number of parents refusing vaccination has been rising with families with children aged below 2, and it's increasing from about 470 cases in 2013 to 1,292 cases last year. That's over just 2 years. We've seen about a threefold increase in the number of parents refusing to vaccinate. Why do you think, you know, this case is going on, and how do we get this under control?
It's actually worrying, because this is only happening in this generation, and what we're trying to do is actually trying to put the message across that vaccination is important. And we've got a program that's actually initiated by the Ministry of Health, and it's with the Malaysian Pediatric Association as well as the Malaysian Society for Infectious Disease and Chemotherapy, and it's called the Immunize for Life program. There's a website called www.ifl.my, which people can actually log into and find out about all vaccines, as well as from the basics to individual vaccines. And that's a ministry initiative in trying to get that message across. It's actually quite worrying for us, because once you get the immunization below that threshold amount, it's for pneumococcus 92, but for other diseases, if you get less than 90, then you will have pockets of outbreaks, and those pockets then will then spread around the same area, and you have then a small epidemic. And you know, we used to have these sort of things in the past. In the last few cases of diphtheria, I think Dr. Yong probably had never seen a case of diphtheria, because
it's too young for that.
Yeah. But I saw one. It was probably one of the last few cases of diphtheria. And this was in a community that was the religious community that refused to have vaccinations. And you know, if you have a case of diphtheria, it's enough to keep remind you that vaccination is important. The problem is the rest of the population have never seen diphtheria, just like Dr. Yong. And then you never
like smallpox as well.
And that's right. And smallpox is completely eradicated. That's okay. But you know, and measles is supposed to have been eradicated in the United States. Then you have one outbreak starting from Disneyland.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we have to, because of this now, because of this refusal or hesitancy, now we have to be more vigilant about the cases that come in to see us. You know, instead of going further and looking at non-communicable diseases, looking at other things that are more important now in the West, now we have to go back and start looking at infections, which, you know, we should have left behind a long time ago.
What are your thoughts on Australia, for an example, wanting to cut benefits for the children if you don't get your child immunised? I mean, is that fair? Is that going against the rights of a human being and then, you know, their take on health?
Well, on an administrative level, I think it's fair dinkum, as you would say, because it is the government who will also be paying for the hospitalisation. What they want to do is to give vaccinations as a preventive measure so as to save the cost of treating a child who subsequently develops any infection that could have been prevented through the vaccination. Of course, those who cannot be vaccinated for health reasons, I'm sure, will not be covered by this new law. When we look at human rights, it is many parents say that it is the right of the parents to decide whether or not to administer a particular vaccine on the child. But what about the rights of the child to live free of disease, to live free of fear of dying of a communicable disease? I think that child has a right too. And what about the right of the fetus to be born without any deformities just because the mother was exposed to another child with rubella? Mm-hmm. I think it is the child's right to be born with sight and hearing and a normal heart and normal IQ. And all this will be robbed from him should the mother come into contact with a child with rubella, especially if the mother herself is not immune. So I think rights does not only just cover that of the parents, but also that of the child.
And the community, really.
And the community at large.
Dr. Zul, you were speaking about religious groups. What is the official stance on vaccination according to Malaysia's religious guidelines?
Well, there's no issue, actually. It is, in Malaysia, according to JAKIM, some of the vaccines have been classified as haros, and basically that's permissible. None of them have actually, I think there's only one that's actually stated as haram. Right? So from a religious standpoint, okay, I'm a Muslim, all right, and from a religious standpoint, I would be sinning if I actually give the vaccine that I consider haram. So I have looked at all the vaccines, there's no issue with any of the vaccines as far as the ingredients are concerned. And I give it, and I explain to, I have most of my patients are actually Muslim patients. I explain to them there's no issue with any of the vaccines.
I think also all religions are pro-life.
Yeah.
And we do whatever it takes to keep us alive as well as those we love. And if the vaccine is the only means of preventing an infection, I think it is a form of initiative. And we don't have strict guidelines to say we are prohibited from giving A, B, C, or D.
Any ill effects that we should be concerned about as far as vaccines are concerned?
In most cases, the child will scream. And yes, at the point of injection, but that's short-lived. They may get a bit of tenderness, redness. Some, but not all vaccines may cause fever or rashes. But by and large, there are no major side effects that I've seen over 20 years of practice. I'm not sure. He's been practicing a lot longer.
Dr. Zul.
She's right. I mean, there's no issue with that. The complications are very mild, so you know, it's not an issue.
Okay, your message, Dr. Zul, on to those who are still resistant about vaccination against and in this case pneumococcal.
I think that parents should, they should look beyond what they read in the internet and try and get opinions from professionals. You know, we will give them an opinion without actually expecting anything more than just the health of the child. And that's what we want. And we want to see their children grow up, and we hopefully they will listen to what we have to tell them about vaccination. And vaccines are safe. That's basically, it is vaccination saves lives. Not vaccines save lives, because vaccines kept on the shelf is not going to save lives. It's vaccination that saves lives. So parents have to get those vaccinations.
Dr. Yeo. Dr. Google does not have a medical degree. That's what I always say. So seek proper advice. Listen to qualified professionals and not politicians making health statements like Donald Trump. Okay? If in doubt, ask. Ask questions. Ask your health professional. If you think your doctor doesn't have the time of day for you, look for someone who can talk to you about it. If you doubt the doctor, ask for a second opinion from another doctor. But don't just discuss amongst yourselves and come up with hypotheses. I've heard a lot of hypotheses. And when I ask for the source, it is merely conjured from a group of individuals discussing about a potential side effect. It's just like saying, if I do this, this happens. What if this were to be done? You know, without actually looking at the scientific evidence. And then they postulate and they come up with a theory. And after theorizing, they put it as a post on social media, and then it goes viral. And suddenly it becomes the gospel truth.
Of course. Okay. Thank you both very much for joining us today. That was Dr. Zulkifli Ismail and Dr. Yong Junina Fadzil, consultants, pediatrician and pediatric cardiologists, talking to us about pneumonia vaccinations on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This show is brought to you by Pfizer Malaysia, bringing science-based solutions to healthcare.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.